This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
Good afternoon, party people. Thanks for sticking around for the Scoot Show with your guest host, me, Ian Hoke. Coleman's in the jar on the ones and twos. We expect Scoot to be back with you tomorrow. I spoke with him a little bit last night. He's doing just great. Can't wait to be back with you. But for the purposes of today, we're going to have a great show at 3:20. We'll be talking about Canal Street. Remember when Canal Street was like the crown jewel of New Orleans with all the department stores? It was the center of commercial and industrial activity, and everybody wanted to be on Canal Street. It's the place to see and be seen. Well, that was some time ago. Canal Street looks okay now, but it's not quite back to the glory of its former days. You already know I live in the French Quarter. I walk up and down Canal Street just about every single day of the week. You see the good, you see the bad, you see the ugly. You can stop in and get some Willie's fried chicken. Maybe get some nice sneakers. Go to that Levi's store. That's where I get my belts. I never knew it was difficult to find belts until I was like, man, where does one go to get a nice belt? I go to that Levi's store over there on Canal. Anyway, a new effort from the city council is aiming to make some improvements that's going to bring back investment, fix infrastructure, and boost business downtown. We're going to talk about what the needs are and why it can be different this time. Because this is not the first time that the city council has requested the planning commission or some other group to come up with a study and give recommendations about how to make Canal Street great again. MCGA, we can put that on a cap. So we're going to talk to Renee Pastorek. Renee is the Chief Economic Development Officer with the Downtown Development District. And I also want to hear from you. What do you want to see on Canal Street? What do you remember about Canal Street from previous times that's not there now that you'd like to see come back? Or what would you like to see on Canal Street that's never been there before? Maybe something brand new. You know what? You know, let your imagination run wild. What would you like to see on Canal Street that would make you want to go down there for a shopping trip or check out some great restaurants? You got visitors coming into town, friends or family. You say, hey, let's go down to Canal Street. They got all kind of great attractions down there. You know, go hog wild with it. I was talking to Diane Newman a little while ago. She said, you know, what if it was more like Paris? You know, where there's restaurants that have tables and chairs and places you can sit outside, like on the sidewalk. The sidewalks are enormous as far as sidewalks goes. There's plenty of room for activities out there. You could have a, you know, like a little cafe or a bistro like they got in Paris. I don't know that if somebody opened up a cafe or a bistro today, their customers would be enthusiastic about sitting out there with Canal Street being the way it is. But there is hope. There is hope for more investment, some zhuzhing of the infrastructure, you know, making it safer for pedestrians, just generally a more pleasant place to be. So we'll talk to Renee Pastorek about that. I also want to hear from you about what you'd like to see on Canal Street. Yesterday, I asked everyone what their class song was when they graduated high school. Like, what was the song that they played at the graduation ceremony when everyone threw up their caps? And I kept calling them caps yesterday. I think it's a mortarboard. I don't know exactly. There's a more sophisticated name for that, but we'll just call them, you know, throw your caps up in the air. Anyway, we got a lot of a lot of great memories from folks, you know, from high schools all over the region here saying, hey, this was my class song. That was my class song. So I went back through all those texts I got yesterday, and I picked out certainly all the ones that I heard multiple respondents say that was my class song, some other favorites, some ones that I thought were not very good class songs, or that kind of made you scratch your head and say, why did you guys pick that? Who picked that? What does that have anything to do with, you know, graduating and maturing and moving on to a new phase of your life? Anyway, I got all those songs coming up here today. We'll be hearing those throughout the show. Some really good songs and some less good songs. In the first hour here, in just a short while, a few minutes, in fact, I'm going to talk to Jennifer Avegno, who's the New Orleans Health Director. You know Jennifer. She's on WWL pretty frequently. And we're going to talk about misoprostol and mifepristone. And I know those are kind of a mouthful. Those are the drugs that are most commonly used in chemical abortions. And we're not really going to talk about abortion today, and I'm not inviting you to, you know, start an argument about whether or not you're pro-life or pro-choice. What we're going to focus on today is that the effect that abortion laws have on women who are not seeking abortions. Does that make sense? I'm talking about women who have wanted pregnancies where something goes wrong and they need health care and now they can't get it because of these laws that are meant to restrict abortion in Louisiana. There are even situations popping up now where women that have already given birth to a wanted child are having life-threatening complications in their post-pregnancy situation because they do not have easy access to these drugs, or these procedures, rather. So misoprostol and mifepristone, as of October 1st, are going to be controlled substances in the state of Louisiana. Reading now from Louisiana Illuminator. Doctors and local elected officials alike vehemently decried a new law that will reclassify the pregnancy care drugs misoprostol and mifepristone as controlled dangerous substances. The legislation takes effect on October 1st and is the first of its kind in the nation. Women are not safe in Louisiana, New Orleans City Councilwoman Leslie Harris said at a committee meeting Wednesday. This is September 18th. Childbearing women are not safe in Louisiana. Republican Governor Jeff Landry signed a bill back in May to reclassify those two drugs because of their association with medication abortion. But they have numerous other medical uses. Misoprostol in particular is used on the daily by OBGYNs for miscarriage management, postpartum hemorrhaging, and IUD insertion. The law was authored by State Senator Thomas Presley. Damn, back at it again, Thomas, from Shreveport. It's originally meant to create the crime of coerced abortion, which, yeah, that should be a crime. I think Thomas, I don't know if it was someone close to him or one of his constituents, I don't remember, but I remember somebody like crushed up an abortion pill and put it in somebody's drink to induce them to have an abortion against their will, which is absolutely whack, and that should definitely be a crime. But I don't know that this is the solution. Making these, you know, safe medications classified as controlled dangerous substances. And like the article says, we're the first in the nation to do this. Will others follow suit? I don't know. I would hope that women and men in other states would hope that their states do not also follow suit, because the outcomes for pregnant women, women who have just completed their pregnancies, are bad by any measure. Whether you're pro-life or pro-choice or somewhere in the middle, you need to know that the laws that we have in Louisiana meant to restrict abortion are having really serious consequences for wanted pregnancies. And I would hope that we could all come together and agree that maybe there's some changes that can be made here. So we'll talk to Jennifer Avegno in a few minutes about that. Hey, I want to make sure I give a big shout out to everybody who's watching the Mayfair Witches on AMC and Netflix, guest starring yours truly. Got some checks in the mail the other day. got that beer money, would like to see those coming. It's a fun show. You may enjoy checking it out. It's on Netflix right now. I think season two is going to come out in just a couple months here, later this fall maybe, or early next year. I'm all over season one. It's a really fun part. I'll let you go see it for yourself. But that was a great experience being a big part of that TV show, and I would encourage you to go watch it so that I get more checks. Thank you for doing that. Look, this is apropos of nothing else we're talking about today, but, you know, we've been having a conversation about Haitian immigrants, right? And the sort of strain that they are placing on services in Springfield, Ohio. Not talking about eating cats and dogs, forget that, but there is concern among people in Springfield, Ohio, longtime residents, city managers, officials, also the migrants. It seems like too many of them arrived too fast, and they again didn't just whip out a map and throw a dart and it landed on Springfield, Ohio, and they all said, "Oh, let's go there." Springfield, Ohio wanted these migrants to come there because they were experiencing a sort of population imbalance where they had a lot of open jobs. They needed more warm bodies in that town. They said, "Ah, great, let's incentivize some of these migrants to come here, and we can kind of turn around the economy of Springfield, Ohio." And they've done that, but also like the schools and the hospitals didn't quite keep up pace. So now there is, you know, some tension there, but it's not an unsolvable problem. And the solution to the problem is not to round up all the Haitian migrants and send them to Venezuela, which is Donald Trump's idea. But you know what got me thinking? There is another place in America that had a huge influx of Haitian migrants that almost doubled the size of the city. This town was only around 10 or 12,000 people at the time. It was a relatively small city. And then over the course of about 5 years, you have the arrival of about 10 to 15,000 migrants. So really almost doubled the size of the city overnight. That's going to have a huge impact on any place. Some of you probably have already unpacked what I'm talking about, but of course I mean New Orleans. In 1809, there were only about 12,000 people here. But after the Haitian Revolution in 1804, tens of thousands of Haitians, including free people of color, formerly enslaved people, white Creoles, they almost doubled the population here in about 5 years. Most of them came as part of a second wave after they initially went to Cuba, but they got expelled from Cuba by the Spanish. And it was complicated for New Orleans when the Haitians got here. The white French-speaking elites of New Orleans already had a sort of personal familial connections with Haiti. They welcomed them. The city's French-speaking Catholics also felt an affinity with the French-speaking refugees. But of course, there were fears, particularly among American officials and the growing Anglo population, that the new arrivals, including the formerly enslaved people, might spread revolutionary ideas, including anti-slavery sentiments. Anyway, the Haitian refugees had a major influence on the city over the course of the next, you know, generation or so. They contributed to the vibrant Creole culture of New Orleans. They really fortified the Catholic presence, influenced our cuisine, left a huge mark on the city's architecture, music, and language, reinforced the city's social structure of a large free and black Creole population that would distinguish New Orleans from other southern cities in terms of race relations. So, I don't know, I'm just pointing this out. Immigration can have a lot of different positive consequences on a place. And I'm not saying that.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. MIDI clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. MIDI offers accessible care, All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
Every possible migrant community has only had immediately positive consequences for those communities. But I think it behooves us to kind of be patient and see how these things unpack over time. In just a minute, we'll be speaking with Jennifer Evagno. We'll step away and take care of some business here. We'll go to break with the Green Day song that is relevant, of course, because it's September, but also this was somebody's class song yesterday. Well, that's what they said. If you want to get in touch with me today, the number is 504-260-1870. That is the Okunar Jewelers talking text line. I'll read 100% of the text messages you send to me today. I'll reply to as many as I can, and the very best ones I'll read on the air, so make them count. I'm Ian Hoke, sitting in for Scoot. I'll be right back after this. 128 here on WWLAMFM.com and always live on the free Odyssey app. And joining us on the line is Dr. Jennifer Evagno, New Orleans Health Director. Doctor, thanks for making time today on short notice. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Ian. I'm happy to be here.
In your conversations with the Louisiana Illuminator there, you described the reclassification of these misoprostol and mifepristone as a public health crisis, ma'am, emphasizing this will delay essential care, particularly in emergencies like postpartum hemorrhaging, which can have life-threatening consequences. Tell us more about that, ma'am. What makes this a public health crisis?
Well, yeah, I think that a lot of lay people might not realize how commonly these medications, particularly misoprostol, are used, and not just in women's health. You know, as one of my OB colleagues put it, if you have a uterus, it's likely that you might have used or needed misoprostol at some point in your life, whether it was to manage a miscarriage, whether it was to have a procedure, or whether it was in childbirth. So it's used a lot by women, but it's also used for a number of other conditions. And what we know is that whenever you restrict access to medications that don't really need that access restricted, then people don't utilize them, people don't get them. And when you don't get the standard of care treatment, then you tend to have worse outcomes. And just understanding Louisiana's historically poor statistics when it comes to maternal health, maternal deaths, and and serious outcomes, anything that makes that worse really is something that we all should take very seriously.
Yeah, I completely agree, and I can't imagine there's very many people listening that that wouldn't agree. So let's drill down on postpartum hemorrhaging. For folks who don't know what that is and don't know what kind of care somebody experiencing that needs and how they might now not be able to get that, walk us through that. What is that?
Sure. Postpartum hemorrhage is worldwide a leading cause of maternal deaths, right? It is very common for women in the course of normal childbirth to have a lot of bleeding. You know, in America, it has also a top cause of death, but we have a lot of resources at our disposal. And in Louisiana, over the last 10 years, the State Department of Health, to its credit, have really made it a focus. They've done a tremendous amount of work with hospitals and doctors and nurses, so that now postpartum hemorrhage in Louisiana is still a concern, but we have so many tools to manage it. One of the major tools to manage when someone is bleeding profusely, either during childbirth or immediately after, is misoprostol. It is a drug that is very safe. It stops bleeding, you know, fairly quickly, and it doesn't have a lot of contraindications or side effects. So for many people, if they are at the bedside treating a patient who's bleeding, this is a drug that they want to have immediately available and give very quickly. When it becomes a controlled substance, that does not happen. It is a different process. It cannot just simply be on hand at the bedside. There's a whole set of regulations that have to go with it. And, you know, if you've ever watched someone, and you know, very few people have, but I can say, having watched someone bleed out during what was supposed to be a routine, wonderful, happy childbirth, it happens very, very, very quickly in a matter of minutes. So it's really, you know, unfortunately, our doctors are going to have, you know, not be able to readily use a medication that might be very beneficial in a short amount of time. And yes, the difference might only be a matter of minutes, but it doesn't take very long for bleeding to go from manageable to severe. And, you know, that's what I think a lot of our doctors and a lot of our patients are concerned about.
Yeah, I do want to stay focused on patients. We'll come back to them in a minute, but I do want to make sure we have time to talk about the effect that this has on healthcare providers. I read this report from Lyft Louisiana and the Center for Reproductive Rights, which highlights an increase among moral distress among clinicians, doctors, hospital staff that know what their patient needs, but they are unsure if they are legally allowed to give it to them, or they're unsure what the consequences will be if they do intervene to save this patient's life. And then what the state police come in the next morning with a pair of handcuffs and lock you up for 10 years? Like, that's crazy. What are you hearing from healthcare providers who are responding to these new regulations?
Well, you're hit the nail on the head. I think once it was very clear that Louisiana, like a handful of other states, decided to criminalize physicians for trying to provide care, then it caused this real chilling effect among my colleagues. And I have to say, we have fantastic doctors in Louisiana, especially our OBs. They go above and beyond every day, all day, and they just want to do the right thing for our patients. But they're watching what's happening in other states where, you know, our providers just want to treat things that are legal in the best way. You know, they are not running around, you know, trying to do abortions. They understand that abortion is illegal under most conditions in Louisiana. They want to be able to safely care for women who are miscarrying or in childbirth or a host of other conditions. But because there has been such a focus on the penalties for physicians, and because the law is vague, and that's because, you know, medicine and the practice of medicine is very broad. You can't possibly think of every potential thing that might come up. There's so much confusion, and they really feel like if they don't get it 100% right, or even if someone misinterprets what might be happening, then there is a real risk of them going to jail, losing their license, being fined an awful lot of money just for trying to give patients the highest quality care. And while our providers, by and large, you know, many of them are committed to working through that and to changing that and to making things better for patients in Louisiana, a lot of our medical students and our young trainees are saying, you know what, I don't want to practice in a place like this. I'm going to go somewhere where I can give the highest quality standard of care that I was trained to do, and I don't have to worry about potentially going to jail. So, you know, we've got a shortage of physicians and providers already in Louisiana, and this is something that we're seeing in other states that is going to make that worse.
There are a couple people texting in right now on the Okunart Jewelers Talking text line that are not picking up what you're putting down, doctor. This text message says, how is the medication restricted? You need a script? How is that restrictive? Am I to believe a doctor in a hospital cannot administer it quickly? I'm calling BS. What's your response?
Yeah, that's a really great question. So whenever you place something on the controlled dangerous substance list, right, it goes on there because it has high potential for abuse. So things like fentanyl, morphine, Xanax, Valium, drugs that we don't really want to be out and about, right, because there's such a high potential for addiction. So it's a good thing that we have that list. But what that does is that there is a very specific way that that medication now has to be secured. There is a very specific process for accessing it. It cannot just be hanging out. You can't carry it from room to room. You can't just have it available on an open cart if you need it. It has to be tied to an order. It has to be what the regulations say are in a securely locked, substantial cabinet. So a very specific type of box, and a large box generally that hospitals have, that may not be anywhere near the room where you're delivering. And you just can't go, anybody just can't go and get it. So it creates on the inpatient side delay and a much longer, more stringent process that is certainly appropriate for something like fentanyl, like morphine. But for a drug like misoprostol, which has zero addictive properties, this just doesn't make any medical sense. And on the outpatient side, there are additional restrictions on a pharmacist who's going to fill one of these prescriptions. And, you know, in many cases, we have already heard of pharmacies refusing to fill it because they're afraid that someone might misinterpret them filling a prescription that is being used for an elective abortion, when really it's clear that it's being used for a miscarriage. But because there are penalties on that pharmacist as well, they don't want to go through the steps. The other issue is all of these controlled substances are tracked on a list. And again, that's very good. So we know that doctors aren't overprescribing things like Percocet or Vicodin because that caused a lot of trouble. But there's a lot of concern from pharmacists and from providers that we're hearing that if I prescribe these routinely for miscarriages and IUD insertions, now my name is on a list that a law enforcement agency could look at and say, oh, wow, I think she's prescribing it too much. I'm going to go investigate her. So it might sound like a small thing, but if you look into what happens with controlled substances, it is very different than just, you know, a Tylenol or going to pick up your, you know, blood pressure medications at the pharmacy.
Thank you, doctor. That's an excellent explanation. If I was asked, in like 10 words, I could say you're adding too much red tape to a life-saving medication, and the time it takes to cut through the red tape means women will die.
It certainly does.
So if those of you that are texting in saying, like, I don't understand, there's your answer. Here's another text that says, other than trying to bash Governor Landry, who I think I mentioned by name once, what is your point? The point, as we've been saying from the beginning, is that making these medications a controlled substances is getting in the way of healthcare for women having wanted pregnancies. We're not talking about abortion. We're not talking about that. We're talking about women who are trying to have a child or have just had a child and are now in medical jeopardy because of these laws. That is the point, Texter. All right. Sorry. I got
right. No. And look, this is not political. You know, I have spoken to physicians across the state of every political stripe. And, you know, no one thinks this is about politics. All of them are saying why this is medically inappropriate. It's scientifically inappropriate. And the consequences are tremendous. And what it's also done is just confuse our patients. Right. They now aren't quite sure what's legal, what's not legal. I've been encouraging everyone I know who is pregnant or might become pregnant to have a real conversation with their OB about, if I need this medication, what does that really mean? How am I going to get it? You know, how can you ensure that I'm not going to have a complication? What if the pharmacy doesn't fill it, right? It's really about protecting the health of Louisianians. Particularly, we want women to have safe childbirth. We want healthy families. All of us do, regardless of where you are in the political spectrum.
Absolutely. Can I keep you for about another 10 minutes, doctor?
Sure.
Okay, great. Coleman, let's step away and take care of some business here. And when we come back, doctor, I want to ask you about, you know, what the long-term implications of this are. We've seen, in some of the Great Plains states, the Dakotas, Idaho, they are turning into maternity care deserts where women who are pregnant or trying to become pregnant are not able to get the kind of treatment that they are accustomed to getting in this country and other industrialized Western countries. We'll talk about that and what Louisiana's future might look like in a few years. I'm Ian Hoke, sitting in for Scoot. We'll be right back after this. That's the way to get in touch. You can give me a call. You can shoot me a text. I got a few minutes left with Dr. Jennifer Avegno, New Orleans Health Director, and then I'll be talking to you. After that, I got no more guests until 3:25. So if you want to talk to me about anything you've heard so far today, get in line now. Doctor, thanks for sticking around. I wanted to touch about the long-term implications of this law. If there's not some sort of, I don't know if it's a legal solution through the courts, if somebody sues and overturns this reclassification, or if the legislators, you know, hear enough back from doctors and physicians that this is bad policy, then they reverse themselves. But I'm imagining, you know, in 10 or 15 or 20 years, when we have the set of circumstances we have now where doctors are afraid to give life-saving medical care because Louisiana would put them in prison for it. Why do people, why would they be practicing medicine here? Why would people come to any of the medical schools that we have here to practice? Why would somebody move their family down here to be an OBGYN or any other kind of physician that's in this sort of, you know, situation? Where does this leave us in another, you know, 10 or 15 years? Are we going to become a maternity care desert where there just aren't any of these types of medical specialists around here?
Well, in some ways, we already are. So about a third of Louisiana parishes are what we would consider maternity care desert, and that there's no OB provider there. And so certainly we can kind of project the future a little bit if we look to Idaho, right? So Idaho has even more restrictive laws or, you know, around reproductive care than Louisiana does. Although they don't have the controlled substances yet, but they have very, very restrictive laws. So in the 2 years since those laws have taken effect, they've had about 40% of their OBs have left the state, and more than half of their high-risk OBs, the people that would be seeing these very complicated cases, have left the state. And the advice to pregnant women in that state is to get helicopter insurance for the duration of your pregnancy so you can go somewhere else if you get really sick. I don't think any of us in America want that to be our future, but that is what is happening right now on the ground in Idaho. So obviously, you know, we need to figure out how we can avert that. But, you know, what we see is that when, you know, I sit on the mortality review committee, and Louisiana, the state Department of Health produces reports every year on maternal morbidity and mortality. They are incredibly well done. They are national best practices. And what we've seen is a real decrease in deaths from hemorrhage. I'm very concerned, and my colleagues are concerned, that that is going to be reversed. And whereas big urban centers like New Orleans and Baton Rouge and Shreveport, you know, there are generally more resources in terms of OBs in general and high-risk specialists and hospitals with advanced capability who can manage the sickest of the sick. But a lot of our births happen in rural areas in Louisiana, in small hospitals that simply don't have the capacity. They just don't have the extra bandwidth. Well, if we don't have this one medication available, it'll be okay because we have all these other systems readily in place. And in many cases in Louisiana where we see the worst maternal morbidity and mortality, it's not in our big cities, it's in our rural areas. So we are further burdening areas that we know are either deserts or close to being deserts, don't have the same level of resources even as our urban areas. That's not going to get better. If we are a state that wants to encourage people to come here, that want people to grow their businesses, grow their families, then I think we need to show that we support doctors. Doctors are pillars of the community, just like pharmacists are. We want to show them that we are welcoming and we appreciate the high quality care that they will bring.
I think we probably got time for just one more here, Doctor. And hesitant as I am to invite politics into the discussion at all, it is inherently a sort of a political issue, at least the way that it's framed now in Louisiana. So the attorney general's job is to defend the laws that the state has passed. That is her mission. So it shouldn't surprise anyone that she would be out here defending what the legislature has done. But it seems to me like she's maybe gone a step further than that in saying that some of the concerns that you're hearing from doctors and physicians are, quote, manufactured, and that the problem, quote, doesn't exist. How do you respond to that?
Well, I would say that the maternal health crisis in Louisiana is very real. And you can talk to doctors who will give you examples, but really talk to patients in the state, talk to people that have had difficult outcomes as it is. So there's no manufacturing here. I will also say that there's been an outpouring of concern from across the state. When we initially learned about the amendment to the bill that created the controlled substances provision, you know, there was a letter sent to the bill's author that had 300 signatures of physicians medical students, and healthcare professions. That's not political. That is a really big number. And it was all different specialties. It was the Louisiana Association of Addiction Medicine. It was the OB medicine. It was emergency medicine, right? So for all of those providers to come together and say, this is a problem and it's going to cause harm, I just don't see how anybody could say that was manufactured. I think that physicians are concerned and confused enough that what we're looking for is clarity, not accusations.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Anything else you want our audience to know before we run out of time here, Doctor?
No, I would just say, if you're a patient, particularly if you're a woman who is either pregnant or going to have pregnant, have a conversation with your doctor. Don't be afraid to do that. Understand what the limitations might be. Understand what the backup plan is. Please have confidence in our providers, but let's all work to, explain to our policymakers that physicians really just want to be able to practice the highest quality care in Louisiana, and that's what we all deserve. So, I'm hoping that we can all work together to mitigate these effects.
You got it. My guest is Dr. Jennifer Evegno, New Orleans Health Director. Thank you for your time, your work, and your way. I'm sure we'll be speaking about this issue again after October 1st as we see these laws in action. Thanks again, Doctor. Have a great week.
Thank you. You too.
504-260-1870 is the number to call. Get in touch. I got a couple texts stacked up here already. I will read those after we come back. At 2:10, we'll do the news bomb, and then we'll chat about politics for a little while until 3:25, and we'll talk about the future of Canal Street. Lots more to get to today. I'm Ian Hoke, sitting in for Scoot. BRB. Oh, man. On the Okanar Jewelers Talking Text line, man, here's a text that says, to some of these challenging texters, do you really want your medical treatment determined by legislators rather than physicians? I don't see how you can justify your position. When I hear these comments, I can't help but wonder why some people are so adverse to information from an expert. That is a great question. And I've thought about this a lot. We actually, this is probably a year ago, we talked to somebody on the show. What was his name? Tom Nichols. Yeah, Tom Nichols. He wrote a book called The Death of Expertise. This is a really unsettling phenomenon in America where you have somebody, like Dr. Jennifer Evegno, who's a doctor who does nothing but talk to other doctors all day. And doctors are coming to Jennifer Evegno from all over the state, Republican, Democrat, Independent, no party. And they're saying, we don't know what's about to happen. And we are extremely concerned that we're not going to be able to provide care without also going to jail. And then there's people who hear that and they say, I don't believe it. That sounds like BS to me. I'll do my own research. No, you doing your own research is part of the problem because some of you are too intellectually incurious to do research in a way that is meant to be done. You just go out and find out what you already think and then think that that's true. That ain't research. We'll be right back.